Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotin in Washington, D.C.
So we are calling for all the groups, even the M23 groups, to stop fighting, but to go back to the table of negotiation.
A DRC opposition party calls for a review of the March 23 agreement with militant groups.
We need to get the approval of some approval of some kind from parliament. You can't be a president that goes and just sells every government asset that you find. It doesn't work that way.
Zambian President Hakainde Hichilema says his administration is preparing to sell the presidential jet to purchase a cheaper one.
We will stop at nothing in ensuring that those that are implicated in corruption and state capture are held accountable.
And South Africa's National Prosecuting Authority, or NPA, says the fight against corruption will continue. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In the DRC, the leader of the Union of Young Progressives Solidarity Party is calling on the government to review an agreement signed with armed groups, including the M23 rebels. Isaac Akili Bayamungu, who was a signatory to the agreement, says the administration in Kinshasa has yet to fully keep its part of the deal. His remarks come after the M23 rebels denied attacking unarmed civilians that left at least 50 people dead. The opposition party condemned the attack, saying it's unacceptable. Isaac Akili Bayamungu tells me that the government must carry out its mandate to protect citizens. He also added that fresh committed dialogue is the best way forward to resolve the conflict.
In our communique, we are requesting the government of DRC to open the negotiation, because normally the government did not respect all his commitment. And from that one, that gives some other groups the reason to start fighting, and people now are dying and we cannot accept it. We disagree with the killing of people. We disagree with fighting, but we are about peace. We are working for peace. That's why we are calling the government of DRC to open the negotiation, talk on what they had committed on that peace agreement.
So basically, you are calling on the government to keep its promises made to various armed groups in the March 23 agreement signed between the government and the armed groups in the country?
Of course, the government have to open a table for negotiation to reevaluate the commitment of both sides. Then we can stop the war, we can stop all the troubles which is in east of Congo.
But armed groups, including the M23 rebel group, that is causing the problem, because various experts have identified armed groups as attacking unarmed civilians, which is creating the problem and not the government. So why blame the government that it is not keeping its part of the agreement?
We are not blaming the government, but the government has responsibility. They have to reevaluate their commitment. They have to open the negotiations so people can explain themselves for what they are fighting. At the place to refuse the negotiation, and then people are dying every day. We are working, and all of us are committed for peace. So when they refuse to talk, they refuse negotiation, that's why the rebels and those who had bad ideas have now right to start fighting. That's why we are calling for all the groups, even the M23 groups, to stop fighting, but we go back to the table of negotiation, talk and walk about peace, so then the population can live peacefully in their areas.
So why do you think people who think the government is not doing its part of the bargain will pick up arms to attack unarmed civilians instead of calling on the government to review the agreement signed? Why pick up arms and kill people?
That's the big problem, and we disapprove the way of going back to arm and fighting. But the government have to open that what we call in French a cadre for talking. We have to open the door for negotiation, see what had been done and what remained to be done. Then we can talk. And they will not be having any reason to fight again, to go back to arm, if the government is talking and is open for negotiation.
There have been calls by the East African Community Mediator, former President Uhuru Kenyatta, backed by Rwandan President Paul Kagame, for a cessation of hostilities or ceasefire by the M23 and other armed groups to pave way for negotiations and dialogue to end the ongoing conflict in parts of DRC. What is your stance on that?
That's our big disapprovement, because normally there is what they call Comité National de Suivi des Accords de Paix de Goma in French. So that means there is a law which is working on that matters of all the armed group in east of Congo. Then actually there is a new one which is facilitated from Nairobi, and that one can work. We are happy to see that they had started talking. But the most important, because even they even conclude in Nairobi without other group or without other signatories of M23 peace agreements. So that one comes back claiming the same peace agreement. That's why we say the government have to identify all the signatories of that peace agreement of M23. Then they reevaluate all the agreement, see what can be done right now to stop that troubles in east of Congo.
Isaac Akili Bayamungu is the leader of the Union of Young Progressive Solidarity Party in the DRC. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Zambian President Hakainde Hichilema says his administration is preparing to sell the presidential jet to purchase a cheaper one. Bought by the previous administration, Hichilema says it is too costly and unnecessary. Local media say the $193 million presidential jet was condemned by the opposition as overly expensive and controversial. The Anti-Corruption Commission has since launched an investigation into the purchase of the plane. The president said funds used to buy the Gulfstream jet could have been used for other things, including taking care of the judiciary or purchasing desks for students. But Nassim Sony, leader of the All People's Congress, OAPC, tells me that the selling of the presidential jet will be a mistake.
This jet was bought at a very exorbitant price. The solution does not lie in selling the jet for a song, okay? Obviously, we're not going to get back the same money at which it was bought. And beyond that,
himself, he vowed when he was in the opposition that he's not going to use that jet. But to fix that does not lie in selling the jet and then going to buy procure a second-hand one. That's what he's saying. If you heard him, he said he wants to buy a cheaper one. Now, that is another problem. The agent they're going to appoint to sell the jet, he'll probably walk away with a chunk of the money, leaving the country with nothing at all. So it is better to keep the jet. If he doesn't want to use it himself personally because of what he said, let him not use it. Let somebody else use it. The next president will use it.
No. But constitutional law experts say the president has the constitutional backing and mandate to legally sell the presidential jet. So that argument is settled. What do you say?
No, not at all. Not at all. If it were so, that would be a big problem. He needs to get the approval, some approval of some kind from parliament. You can't be a president that goes and just sells every government asset that you find. It doesn't work that way, okay? So he has an obligation to ensure that he comes clean on what he wants to do. But our position as the opposition political party, and speaking for ourselves, is that he should not sell the jet. He has so many things that he needs to sort out. Everything is spinning out of control. The economy is collapsing. People have no jobs. Skyrocketing prices, and so on and so forth.
But Nelson, the president has laid out what he plans to do. The jet was too exorbitant. He plans to sell it, buy a cheaper one, and then use the rest of the money to help the people of Zambia. Isn't this a laudable move? And if you don't agree, what is your solution to this?
The solution is return the jet, because currently there is another jet that he's currently using. So why should he buy another jet after selling a brand new jet? That doesn't make sense. What we need is an upgrade. If the current jet, which is currently using, which was bought by the previous government, we need an upgrade. And the upgrade is the one that is already there. that he himself must use as president.
Zambians gave him the backing based on the promise that he was going to sell the presidential jet. He is keeping that promise. What is wrong with that? He just made a promise and he's keeping the promise.
I think the argument is that we are past that point. We cannot go through that trajectory of disposing state assets. That thing was bought. It might have been a mistake at the time it was bought, but we must live with that mistake. And the solution does not lie in trying to fix a mistake with another mistake. That's what he's trying to do, because he can't use it. But his family, I'm told, is using the jet. I'm told his wife recently flew to Dubai with the same jet. But himself, he can't go in it, because he promised Zambians that he'd never use the plane. So the way out is not to sell it for personal reasons.
But those are allegations. Those are not facts. I cannot independently substantiate that. So please withdraw.
Alleged. I think the appropriate expression is that it's alleged that his wife used the jet. Okay? And several other government officials, they've used the jet. So what is the problem here? Okay? So we don't think that the need has arose for him to sell the jet.
Nelson Soni is the leader of the Zambian Opposition All People's Congress, or APC. He spoke with me from London. In South Africa, the National Prosecuting Authority, or NPA, says it's committed to fighting corruption. It vowed to prosecute to the full extent of the law those accused of corruption. This after the organization's investigating directorate finalized a settlement agreement that forces ABB, an international technology company, to pay $143 million in fines. The company also admitted its employees engaged in acts of corruption. It followed an inquiry into what the NPA says was a complex corruption at the state-owned electricity company Eskom. The NPA says the fines are a bold step in ensuring that companies or individuals are held accountable for crimes they commit. But critics say top leaders or decision makers at ABB should also be punished to serve as deterrent. NPA spokesperson Tunzi Maga tells me that investigations are still ongoing to prosecute those responsible for ABB's corrupt practices in South Africa.
Of importance is the fact that the ABB has been approaching us or engaging us for the past 4 weeks. We then took into account that a protracted prosecution process would be very costly for us, and they might get just a fine. And now they are offering to pay $2.5 billion into our fiscus. And they are cooperating by providing us with key witnesses and evidence in order to prosecute the directors and employees at the corruption and state capture that happened at Eskom. We took that into consideration.
Mr. Maga, is there a time limit or a time frame by which the organization is supposed to pay this amount or fine?
They should make the payment within 60 days from today.
What is the significance of this accountability agreement?
Importantly, is the cooperation that they are offering to the South African law enforcement in the investigation and prosecution of the directors and employees of the company. So this does not indemnify anyone, but indemnifies the company as it is paying punitive reparations to South Africa. And that money is going to go to the criminal asset recovery account and would be restitution to the victims and be used to ensure that there are resources to fight corruption.
Some people are questioning why the directors of the company are not being held accountable. You talked about indemnity. Does this agreement absolve them from any punitive measure that the NPA could possibly take in the near future?
The directors who are implicated by evidence that we have collected will face full prosecution. It's only the company that will benefit from the deal, the settlement agreement. But the directors and any employee who is implicated by evidence will be prosecuted.
What message does the NPA want to send per this accountability agreement with this company?
We will stop at nothing in ensuring that those that are implicated in corruption and state capture are held accountable. Impunity is no longer a given. We want to restore the rule of law.
Now, in Ntunzi, some people are suggesting that NPA seem to be going after, so to speak, the low-hanging fruit, and that sometimes your decisions to prosecute an organization or individuals are based on political expediency to supposedly go after those who are perceived to be political opponents of the powers that be. How do you respond to such criticisms?
There is no truth to those allegations. We are guided by the evidence. We follow the evidence and do not target any individual.
So who can approach the NPA if there is a suspicion of public embezzlement or financial malfeasance in the South African government or institutions?
Any member of the public can approach the investigating directorate on matters that fall within the mandate of the ID.
Your message to the people of South Africa following this accountability agreement?
That will stop at nothing in holding those that are responsible for state capture and corruption to account. The rule of law will be restored and impunity is no longer a given.
Ntunzi Maga is the spokesperson for South Africa's National Prosecuting Authority, or NPA. He spoke with me from the capital, Pretoria. In Malawi, the Center for Democracy and Economic Development Initiatives, or CDEDI, is calling on the Anti-Corruption Bureau to investigate and prosecute those accused of financial malfeasance. The group also says the anti-graft agency should dispel perceptions that some allies of the president are not being investigated despite allegations of corruption. This, it says, should be done by ensuring equal treatment before the law. The comments come after Vice President Saulos Chilima was recently arrested and charged with corruption. But supporters of the vice president say the accusations are politically motivated. They also say allies of the president accused of corruption have not been arrested or charged with graft. Sylvester Namiwa, the executive secretary of the Center for Democracy and Economic Development Initiatives, or CDEDI, tells me that the fight against corruption must be holistic and impartial to root out what he says robs citizens of public funds meant for development.
While commending the SCB for making such a bold decision to arrest the vice president, who is the president of the one of the major partners of the Tonse Alliance government, the UTM, we would like to remind the Bureau to extend this feed to the Malawi Congress Party, which is another major partner, because there are clear and straightforward cases. For example, when the president was reacting to the report for the Anti-Corruption Bureau, made a reference that his own chief of staff, Prince Kapodangaka, is implicated in the Zunificata corruption scandal. So Malawians are waiting with bated breath the day when the SCB are going to pounce on Prince Kapodangaka. The other straightforward issue is to do with the Malawian Congress Party Secretary General, who is also Natural Resource Minister, as Nohoa Nkaka, who is also expected to have benefited through a gift of a Mercedes Benz from the same business person. Another issue is the allowance scandal that resurfaced at the Accountant General's office.
Sylvester, with this major achievement, as supporters of the anti-corruption are saying, with the arrest of the vice president, they said the Anti-Corruption Bureau must be given enough time to proceed cautiously so they compile credible evidence that will make the cases against these individuals that you have mentioned more credible and winnable when they go to court. Why wouldn't you just give them the time to do its work as it proceeds with the vice president on graft charges?
We are a pillar within the fight against corruption. So we are just reminding the Anti-Corruption Bureau what is the expectation of the people, because the cases I'm referring to are straightforward cases as compared to other cases which may be complicated or may tend to consume a lot of time. We don't want the SCB to create the impression that there are sacred cows. There are some people that are above the law. Otherwise, whatever they have done can pass for selective application of justice, because from where we are standing, SCB seems to be creating the impression that you can loot and plunder public funds as long as you're in good books with the president, as long as you belong to the ruling Malawi Congress Party, then you are safe.
But Amiwa, some people are suggesting that if the vice president, the number two most powerful person in Malawi, could be arrested, then, you know, the Anti-Corruption Bureau can also focus on the rest who are alleged to have committed or violated the law to also be prosecuted. But first things first.
When the president received a report from the ACB, he moved to remove the delegated powers from the vice president. During the same material time, he made a reference that his own chief of staff, Prisca Pondangaga, is also involved. But then today, the ACB is moving in, pouncing on the vice president. This is the impression which the Anti-Corruption Bureau is trying to create. This is why we are charging him that they should not allow this to sink into the minds of Malawians by just doing the needful. They should pounce on Nkaka, they should pounce on Prisca Pondangaga, they should pounce on Dr. Steve Kayuni. Now, the confidence of Malawians in their Anti-Corruption Bureau will keep increasing. At the same time, we'll be fighting the very same vice that is blamed on our stagnation in as far as issues of social and economic development are concerned.
From your organization's standpoint, has the Anti-Corruption Bureau met the expectations of Malawians following the arrest and now the process of arranging the vice president on corruption charges?
This is a critical moment. This is why we are reminding them that they should do a step forward. They should take a step forward. Because after news broke that the ACB has arrested the vice president, time started waging. There was a question to say, who is next? Now, it depends on how the ACB is going to respond or answer the question after the arrest of Oda Hidima, who is next? It will be a deciding factor whether Malawians will still have the trust in their ACB or they will lose the trust of the people.
Sylvester Namiwa is the Executive Secretary of the Center for Democracy and Economic Development Initiatives, or CDEDI. He spoke with me from the Malawian capital, Lilongwe. At least 1.3 billion people worldwide live with disabilities and are likely to die earlier than those without. This is according to the global report launched by the World Health Organization. It shows that there is a higher risk of premature death and illness among persons with disabilities. And as the world commemorated the International Day of Persons Living with Disabilities Saturday, the World Health Organization Director General Tedros Ghebreyesus says health systems should be working to reduce the challenges that people with disabilities face. For VOA, Maureen Ojiambo has more.
One in six people globally are living with disabilities. A report by the World Health Organization outlines 40 actions across the health sector for governments to take. They draw on the latest evidence from the academic studies as well as consultations with countries and civil society, together with organizations representing persons with disabilities. The United Nations says everyone should be given the opportunity to dream and become everything they desire. Ahim Steiner is the program administrator for the United Nations Development Program, UNDP. He says technology and innovation is crucial to shaping a more inclusive world and that people with disabilities are more likely to be left behind.
This is particularly important in developing countries, which are home to 4 out of every 5 people with disabilities. Certain groups, such as migrants, refugees, and women with disabilities, are even more at risk of being left behind. The United Nations Development Programme is harnessing technology and innovation to help improve the daily lives of persons with disabilities. For instance, the UNDP Accelerator Lab in Bosnia and Herzegovina has supported the development of a new mobile app that is enabling people with motor disabilities to move independently by providing personalized routes.
Persons with disabilities also have an increased risk of developing chronic conditions, with up to double the risk of asthma, depression, diabetes, obesity, oral disease, and stroke. The UN says including these people in society and in the labor force is an essential to upholding human rights, sustainable development, as well as peace and security. It is also important to the promise of the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development Goals to leave no one behind.
To achieve the global goals, we need to shape the inclusive digital societies of the future. To this end, UNDP's new digital standards are helping us to design digital solutions that are human-centered, accessible, and inclusive. Look to Vietnam, where UNDP is working with the country's Blind Association to make digital state services more accessible. The United Nations is leveraging the power of technology and innovation so that persons with disabilities can have a say in their futures towards a more inclusive, accessible world for all.
It is estimated that about 80% of persons living with disabilities in low and middle-income countries where health services are limited face health inequity challenges. In Kenya, companies are adopting inclusion and diversity for these persons. The Kenya Power and Lighting Company launched a revised policies to integrate them into the mainstream. The policies will help employees living with disabilities comfortably contribute towards the company's objectives. Geoffrey Muli is the company's representative.
We will continue to work with like-minded partners, policymakers, and relevant institutions to create awareness of ACBO and collectively provide sustainable solutions to support people with disabilities.
According to the United Nations, at least 80 million Africans live with disabilities. They include those with mental health conditions as well as birth defects and other physical impairments. This year's theme, marking the needs of those with disabilities, is transformative solutions for inclusive development, the role of innovation in fueling an accessible and equitable world. Those living with disabilities urge governments, health partners, and civil society to ensure all health sector actions work to ensure those with physical and mental challenge enjoy the right to the highest standards of well-being. Reporting for VOA, I'm Maureen Ojiambo in Sacramento, California.
It's the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Cote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, and music from African Collection. But first, it's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. We begin the sports in Qatar, where Senegal will try to add to the list of stunners in the round of 16 on Sunday when they take on England, who have never lost to an African side. If Senegal are to pull off the shock, they might have to do it without their inspirational leader and coach, Aliou Cissé, who has been sidelined with an illness. Adding to the challenge, the African champions will definitely be without their midfield general, Idrissa Gueye, who is suspended for the match at the Al Bayat Stadium, having picked up a second yellow card against Ecuador in their final group match. England are unbeaten against African opposition at the World Cup in 8 meetings, winning 4 times. The other results have all ended goalless. Ex-Premier League striker and Senegal team ambassador El Hadji Diouf says the team are playing for all of Africa.
We don't play for ourselves. We play for Africa, and we play for the people to love beautiful football and believe of us. Football is more than sport in our country. That's why this World Cup means a lot for us to come here, to pass the first round, and now we're having a big game coming against England.
Diouf also talks about invoking the spirit of the 2002 side he played in, which reached the knockout stages of the tournament, and says they fear nobody in the England side.
This Senegalese team, built around by Aliou Cissé, our ex-captain in 2002. Myself, I was there, Tony Silva, Lamine Diatta, and we're talking about a lot about Senegal-France. This game is not about like football on the game. It's about fight. It's about like belief. It's coming from heart. And we know a lot of our supporters waiting for that game.
Ghana's head coach Otto Addo has resigned from his role after his Black Stars side crashed out of the 2022 FIFA World Cup on Friday. The Black Stars suffered a 2-0 defeat to Uruguay in their final game of Group H and missed out on qualification for the round of 16 in the process. Following Ghana's defeat, Otto Addo announced his resignation from the national team as he's set to resume his coaching role at German giants Borussia Dortmund.
Before I started to work for the GFA, everybody knew, and I said it before, I have a contract with Dortmund and I have to respect that.
In basketball news, host Egypt won gold in both the men's and women's categories at the FIBA 3x3 Under-17 African Cup 2022 in Cairo, Egypt. In the men's category, Egypt won gold in the breathtaking final against the Democratic Republic of Congo, 20-17 points. In the women's side, Egypt dominated the competition from the first game and won gold, defeating the Democratic Republic of Congo in the final, 21-3 points. And that's it for all of this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospects in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Undoubtedly, the African National Congress, ANC, once led by the iconic Nelson Mandela, is now in deep crisis. As may be recalled, after the 1954 elections, which ushered in a non-apartheid South Africa, the ANC swept the polls. The overwhelming support of the ANC by the black population in particular was a testimony to the gratitude for the leadership role the ANC in the ending of apartheid. But other South Africans did not share the view of a monopoly of power by the ANC. They believed that continuing monopoly of power by the ANC would be detrimental to the democracy of South Africa. And it was always their wish that there should be lessening of support of the ANC. That wish was realized when factions began to appear in the ANC, particularly after the death of Nelson Mandela. These deep difficulties emerged in the surface towards the end of President Mbeki's administration. Two factions showed its head. There were those who were promoting Jacob Zuma, an other apartheid leader, to be the head of the ANC. A fight really led by the youth wing of the ANC, led by Julius Malema. When President Zuma took over, there were difficulties because many in the media had opposed his emergence as leader. And throughout his administration, there were those who felt that corruption was becoming the order of the day, particularly as symbolized in the view by the so-called state capture. Corruption charges were leveled heavily against President Jacob Zuma. And at the end, the youth leader, Julius Malema, had to be dismissed as members of the ANC because he led the charges of corruption and he found his own political party. While earlier factions of the ANC could not survive outside of the ANC, Julius Malema was able to succeed. When, within the end of the coming end of President Zuma, a bitter fight ensued within the ANC between two large factions. one led by the president, argued that corruption was rife within the ANC and President Zuma was the main cause. So in the last national convention, President Pitsulpona was elected as the leader and he became the president of South Africa. The president led the fight to clean the ANC of corruption. He pursued the corruption charges against Jacob Zuma. So now there is an irony in what has appeared in what is called the Farm Gate, where $4 million seem to have been stolen under mysterious circumstances. And now a parliamentary committee has issued a damning report in 3 volumes. The publication of this report is now the current version of the crisis in ANC. President has denied any all charges of corruption, but the media, which earlier had been strongly supporting him, are also making noises against him. The ANC, which has been divided over this issue of corruption, now believe that what they had suspected was happening, that the president was being influenced by outside forces to raise the corruption charges against the so-called Zuma faction. And they may be looking for revenge. So there is the question as to whether they could maintain the president as their leader. Towards this end, the National Executive Committee was to meet last Friday, but the president did not appear at the meeting. And the meeting was deferred on the 6th of December, when they hope to take a decision. In the media and in talk shows in South Africa, there is a strong belief that the president could not survive this criticism of corruption and that he may have no other alternative but to resign, since the report said that he may have violated his responsibilities under the Constitution of South Africa. But then also another problem. Many in the media, though they are critical of the president, are wary that should he design that the Zuma faction in the ANC may have to provide a new leader, something which they do not want to support. So yeah, there is an argument being made that no one should rush to judgment, but to give the president some time to explain himself. All these shows that the once glorious ANC may be falling apart because of division within the ANC, whether sponsored or not by outside forces. They all added then, united we stand, and divided we shall fall. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs.
Viva Africa! Viva, viva! Viva Africa! Viva Kuduro!
It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
Translates Afrobeat brings bitterness. My confidence can make you love me. Kuduro, Music Africa. Kuduro was formed in Angola, 1980s. Afrobeat. Zombo, Vangora, Marameta, Mozambique.
My Asian friends, America, let me see in Africa. Eh? Ilo piano,
Caribbean,
na Valentino.
Havana
of Africa, we love in everybody. When you come to Africa, feel at home, nobody. No matter where you're from, don't worry, my friend. It's so wonderful when people meet. Viva Africa! Shake your body, I say scream and shout. Life is too short. No matter where you come from, Africa is your home. Scream and shout. Come dance with me. Chesa, chesa,
hey!
Chesa, mziki, chesa. Africa, hey, Mama Africa.
Dancing, chilling, drinking, everybody happy.
nipe tafadhali nikunje shei wea utataka kubanduka penzi langu nikikuonjesha kama sio wewe nani tena hakuna kama wewe maishani wea utataka kubanduka penzi langu nikikuonjesha kama sio wewe nani tena hakuna kama
Wasema jua kali ananyesha baada ya kisoteso mimi najua jota nisatesa tena mezaribu chungu za mvua gani inawaka nyota ndogo kiangalia juu hewani inarushia kamba nivutia hapa chini kwa mchanga wewe yako msichana sitaki usiku ati mapenzi nionjeshe nipe yote ndamani kwa balcony ndende usishuke hata hapo nje tunaonekana na wasenge sababu leta fanya nikupa penzi langu bebe itafanya wasenge wachana shika msichana anze katika genge mwili zetu wawili zipate joto vile zimeshikana na mimi nakwambia tulia hapo ndani na mwaga pichana saka nchere mkoko chini weza chichazia kijana hakuna mali naenda niko nae milele nimekubeba mkono nijo balko niongezeka kelele wananguwa na mgongo kisema
kuwa wakipenda
maziwa
kuwa ya nyesha
in my brain baby you take over me boo. You make me dancing and it's just for you my love I will do anything baby you know me mama.
And that was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Beckford, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, family names are like flowers. They blossom in clusters. I'm your host, Peter Clotte in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Telling people what you mean.